This is Radio Today.
Changing Destiny is proudly brought to you by WEM Media, right here on Radio Today. Radio Today, radio that delivers.
Welcome to Changing Destiny. My name is Paul Pereira. Now, South Africans, if they are concerned about one thing in particular, it is very often that of crime. But crime, of course, comes in different forms, and some of it seems to be politically motivated actions by forces of law and order, and particularly in our National Prosecution Services, or those are the allegations. We'll be testing some of those tonight with our resident, if I might say, law and order and security, organized crime and fraud investigations expert, and that is Chad Thomas, of course, who is the chairman of IRS Forensic Investigations and who joins us every few months to update us on some of the bigger cases that are before our courts, some of the bigger investigations, and some of the things we don't see in the situation generally around crime prevention and the forces of law and order. We'll be chatting with Chad just after we've listened to Sipho Hotstix Mabuse's Burnout.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You're on Changing Destiny, and tonight we're chatting with our regular guest, Chad Thomas. Chad being the chairman of IRS Forensic Investigations, and we're talking matters, law and order, prosecution, courts, things like that. Chad, welcome back.
Thank you very much. As always, I appreciate the opportunity of chatting to the listeners, and it's like a home from home.
Chad, let's start off with what appears to many people to be a political prosecution, and that is the case against Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan.
You know, when you look at what's been happening of late, specifically with regards to the whole SARS spy rogue unit, the recent release of the book Rogue by Johan van Lochrenberg, which tackles the allegations that were made by Sunday Times, by the Sekekani panel, by the Cruen Commission, and by KPMG and by all others that were involved, one would have thought that this would either have died, or it would have reached a point where proper charges would have been laid should there have been contraventions of our Intelligence Services Act. Pravin Gordhan hasn't been charged according to the so-called activities of the SARS rogue unit. He's been charged allegedly for fraud and theft in regards to Ivan Pillay's pension. Now, this is very strange because according to the state, Ivan Pillay retired, he got his package, and then he was brought back on contract. Now, when I was in the military and when we were leaving 94, 95, 96, we were afterwards called VSPs, Voluntary Service Packages, where we left without mentoring somebody. We weren't exchanging skills or transferring skills, and we were then asked to come back. I wasn't one of the people that went back, but a lot of my colleagues in the military did go back on contract, even although they'd received packages, so that they could now mentor others, etc. And often you'd find people that have retired, received packages, there's been a lack of skill transfer, and they ask these people to come back, yeah, or they need them.
Or they have the thing of clear you off the permanent staff so that we get the demographics right in terms of transformation, but we bring you back as a mentor.
That's correct. Yeah. Now, in this particular instance, I find it strange that the NPA is charging somebody in this regard when they themselves have a very interesting dilemma. They brought back a person who was 65 years of age. She was reappointed as the deputy CEO of the National Prosecuting Authority. She had been an ambassador. She had been seconded back to international affairs. And we're talking about Ambassador Beryl Sisulu. And she was brought back, and when they brought her back, they didn't bring her back that they put on a contract. They tried to make her permanent. And they had such a problem because the system that they have as a payroll system kept on kicking her out. So Corinne De Beer, who was the then head of the NPA, had to find another system to put Ambassador Beryl Sisulu on, so Ambassador Beryl Sisulu could be paid as somebody who was post 65 years of age and who was reappointed in the deputy CEO's post. Now, that to me raises huge question marks, far bigger question marks than somebody receiving their package, leaving and coming back on contract.
While we're on this whole topic of the NPA, suddenly they seem to be chasing former Minister Trevor Manuel, and this comes over the weeks, the last few weeks, as it's become fashionable to do, I might add. He's suddenly come out of the woodwork. He's now chairman of Rothschilds in South Africa, and now he's come out of the woodwork as a stern critic of President Zuma. Suddenly the NPA is going for him. Is that linked?
You know what? We have to always ask ourselves about the timing. So, you know what, we leave it to our listeners to decide. At this point in time, you've painted the picture. Suddenly he gets charged after he's come out in support of his ex-colleague, or his ex-employee, rather, when he was Minister of Finance, Pravin Gordhan, reported directly to him as Commissioner of SARS. And it must be remembered that the documentation that was submitted originally for the SARS so-called intelligence unit to be founded, together as a joint venture with the National Intelligence Agency, was done at a time when the Minister was Minister of Finance, Trevor Manuel, and the Commissioner was the Commissioner, Pravin Gordhan. So he is somehow linked to that whole rogue narrative. This particular case they want to bring against him, what they're investigating him for, is for some or other contract. A service provider was meant to be paid 100 million rand, and they land up invoicing close to 1 billion rand for that same project. And they're now saying, well, what service was delivered that was 10 times the amount, and how come they still got paid? So this is going to be very interesting, but we are living in extremely interesting times.
One thing that I found more confusing than interesting has been the case of a police unit in Durban, an organized sort of crime unit that seems to have been all expelled. General Besson, was it?
General Boysen.
Boysen, that's right. And how the Sunday Times alleged that this was some death death killer unit, and then it's been found that it wasn't at all, and every single time Boysen tries to get his job back, somebody kicks him out. What is the story there, in a nutshell? I know it's complicated.
Thank you for bringing that up, and I'm going to plug Craigle Park Sports Club, where they have a bowling club that now trades as AJ's in the Park. This coming Monday, 5:30 for 6, Jessica Pitchford, who penned the book on behalf of General Boysen, together with General Boysen, will be discussing their book in Craigle Park at length. So if any of the listeners in the Craigle Park area are interested, he will be there in person together with Jessica Pitchford, who's a very well-known veteran South African journalist.
Do you know when on Monday?
Between 5:30 for 6 p.m. at AJ's in the Park, which is in Craigle Park. It's the old Craigle Park Bowling Club.
Yeah.
I think it's a very interesting narrative, because it was the same Sunday Times investigative team that was supposedly wrapped over the knuckles for incorrect reporting on the SARS spy rogue unit. Now, most of that unit is still there. Stefan Hofstadter is still there.
Are we talking SARS or the Durban?
Well, it's the same investigation team. Investigation team at Sunday Times broke the story, and both stories have been debunked by the likes of Newsweek, by the likes of Media 24, Arjun Basan, Paulie van Wyk, those journalists.
I think even the ombudsman, the press ombudsman, has ruled against
The ombudsman ruled against certain aspects of the SARS so-called rogue narrative. But if you look at General Boysen, it was a totally different situation. He was a career cop. He was from Natal. He worked his way up from the bottom all the way to head up the Hawks. He was the head of the Hawks for KZN. And a unit that he had established under his command, known as the K2 Manor Tracing Unit, became known as a so-called hit unit, hit squad. And all the taxi owners were accusing them of excessive force. And there are a number of interesting stories that he does cover in his book, but that are questionable. In one instance, they went to a suspect's place of work, said, "Are you so-and-so?" He said, "No, I'm not, but take me to my house. I'll get my ID book and I'll prove I'm somebody else." He went into the house. They waited outside, and he started shooting at them from inside the house. He obviously had a gun there. Another incident where a suspect was killed, he was coming out the house, they'd arrested him, he was only in his underwear, and he supposedly drew a weapon from nowhere, and he also got killed. So there were a lot of cases where there was questions asked, but if you read the book, you'll see that General Boysen says that in each and every case, the forensics found that there was gunshot residue on the suspects, and that residue was primer residue, which meant that they had to have been holding a firearm and been firing at the police when they got killed. And I think there's 9 of those cases.
So why have they been so anti him? It's almost a determined campaign to get rid of him.
Well, it goes down to a wonderful man called Thoshin Pandey, who I investigated a few years ago for a Ferrari story up here in Johannesburg that he sold and then wanted back, and he fabricated certain affidavits. He was responsible for arranging the accommodation for the South African Police Services during the World Cup 2010. He allegedly overpriced it significantly, looked after certain police officers at a later stage. A brigadier who happens to be the husband of the provincial commissioner, he sponsored his 50th birthday party, I think it was, and but basically he has been accused of corrupting the Natal police. He's also very involved in the Zuma family, supposedly. Edward Zuma went to visit General Boysen and asked General Boysen to release funds that had been frozen of Thoshin Pandey. He asked General Boysen to release 900,000 rand that he claimed was owed to him by Thoshin Pandey, and the general refused. And that's when he was suspended. And every time the courts have ruled for him to be reinstated, he gets suspended for something else.
They must potentially owe this man a lot of money, because this has been going on for years, hasn't it?
Well, he's been suspended with benefits. So he hasn't lost anything. But what's quite bizarre is he's one of the few people to have ever written a book while still in the employ of the organization that he believes is
slamming.
So he's still in the employ of the South African Police Services as the head of the Gauteng, the KZN Hawks, and he's now written this tell-all book called Blood on Their Hands.
There must be rules against that. But before we get to, let's not go back to him. What has happened to the case against Glynis Breytenbach?
Strange you should ask. They were back in court recently.
Let's just give a bit of background to it again for listeners.
Glynis Breytenbach was the head of the NPA Specialized Commercial Crimes Unit that Jibba later took over. She was head of the Pretoria division of it. Jibba at a later stage, I think, and Lawrence Morebi were her seniors, although they clashed on a number of issues, most pertinently being that of General Richard Mluli, the suspended head of crime intelligence. But Glynis Breytenbach has had an interesting career for quite some time now.
And hasn't she just?
She received funding for her disciplinary inquiry via the F.W. de Klerk Foundation, and it transpired that the funds actually came from the Natie Kirsch Foundation, and it was just laundered through the F.W. de Klerk Foundation, and it wasn't declared at the time. She had also solicited a massive multi-million loan from him previously, and she's been involved in some, let's say, extraordinary cases where there has been the inference made that she has been sensitive towards the needs of big business, and big business that is connected to people that she may know. Not just big business. Lolly Jackson's estate was still being investigated by both SARS and the SECU, and she represented the one of the franchise holders in her personal capacity while still working for the SECU against the estate of Lolly Jackson to try to get him the rights to the Teasers franchise in Pretoria. There was allegations made that Bezaden Hoach, who she was very close to, an advocate's son, was arrested for drunken driving down in the Cape, and that she flew at the state's expense, and that she interfered in the case so that he could get a lesser sentence, or that he could get what's called diversion, which is another way of being punished by the state that doesn't significantly impact on your life.
Yeah. Now, but the fact is that she's now a Democratic Alliance Member of Parliament. Charges have been proffered against her. She claims they're politically motivated, and the case seems to have gone away.
The case is ongoing. The case was heard 2 weeks ago in court. It stood down. I think it's back next month. She's been charged now for deleting information from her state laptop, the laptop that was issued to her.
So for being a Hillary Clinton.
Basically. But in this particular instance, it would seem that she was moonlighting. She might have been double dipping. She was involved with business, or she was allegedly involved in business that she might have, should have been investigating. And of course, there's that whole Kumba ICT debacle relating to the iron ore out Posmansberg way, where she was accused of irregularities.
I'm going to take a little break now. When I get back, I want to understand, if you'll just give this, while we play the song, give this a bit of thought, is why the police have been so slop, as far as I can see, when it comes to dealing with Fees Must Fall. We've got hundreds of millions of rands damage done to our universities, and the police seem to never be arresting anybody. Nobody seems to be in court except one or two guys who are being held in custody. But after a year's worth of damages, nobody's been charged. So we'll be talking about that. And I also want to chat, if we may, about a rather strange little alliance that has popped up in investigation circles. And we'll be doing all of those things with Chad Thomas just after Malaika's Destiny.
Something I've always been searching for, and you give me so much.
Welcome back. You're on Changing Destiny, Paul Pereira and Chad Thomas of IRS Forensic Investigations. Chad, the universities, am I being unfair on the police who are under a hail of stones and petrol bombs and sticks, jabbings and punchings?
When you say it
when
like
I say that,
that
they slop in dealing with the protesters on our campuses.
You know, it's a loaded question. Everybody wants to live in a utopia where we have free education and we have, you know, everything so perfect we can all go home and sing Kumbaya every night. But unfortunately, the reality of it is we're not there yet. And what saddens me so much is that the police are being provoked, and they're being provoked in a horrible manner and fashion. And you hear them saying, we want a Marikana. These are the students chanting, we want another Marikana. They want to be martyred. They want somebody to die. And today we saw in both Wits as well as in union buildings, there was violence. In fact, one of the organizers from Wits was shot multiple amounts of times by rubber bullets. And yeah, one can feel for her, but one is to understand that the police have been exceptionally patient. If one looks at the way our police were and how they are now, we no longer have dogs. Dogs are no longer used in a riot situation. We used to have what was called the crocodile, where they had a long leash for the dogs, and they used to let those dogs off into the crowd, and they were able to pull it back on that very long 20-meter leash. Dogs were removed more than 10 years ago, and they're not even used in a riot situation anymore. Rubber bullets are used, stun grenades are used, water cannons are used, and there's baton charges. But the police are overwhelmed. There's a lot of people participating in these Freeze Must Fall protests. How many of them are actual students, and how many are people that are joining in the fray, we don't know, because the Freeze Must Fall movements have taken umbrage to the fact that they've been accused of looting shops, robbing hawkers, burning libraries, etc.
But they would, wouldn't they? I mean, they would say that.
They would say that. But
I mean, can I just make the point? These are guys coming up for their peaceful protest carrying all sorts of weapons.
Well, I made the point on Twitter that people that have gone onto campus have become strictly controlled. You have to have an access card. In some instances, even biometric controls with fingerprints, etc. And somebody tweeted me on Twitter to say that anybody could pick up a student's card and go in. And I found that a bizarre statement, because we're talking about areas on campus where they found stashes of petrol bombs, they found stashes of rocks, they found stashes of sticks. So it would seem that there has been an intent to provoke the police. The burning of structures, the burning of education halls, the burning of libraries can never, ever be tolerated. One just has to remember what happened in Alexandria all those hundreds of years ago. You cannot burn books. It makes me want to cry if I hear books have been burnt.
When you start burning books, you will end burning people. We learned that in Nazi Germany.
So I don't believe that the Freeze Must Fall protesters have gone about this the right way, and I don't believe that provoking the police to try get another Marikana-type outcome is the right way to go. I think our police have been exceptionally, exceptionally professional, and I salute them for that.
Have they done enough to try and break this thing? Because it's one thing to control it, but there comes a point where you are in a battle situation, you have to break it.
You know what? You have the democratic right to protest. You have the freedom of expression. You have the freedom of speech. Do we want to break it? I don't know.
I don't mean breaking protest. I mean breaking rioting.
Breaking rioting is necessary. I think if you look at Lamini, who was one of the primary leaders, his age is in question. Was he born 1983? Yeah. Was he born 1986?
Is he from?
When did he become a South African citizen? Is he still a Swazi citizen? Was he a Sisulu? Was he in fact the child of a Swazi princess? Does he have a PhD in nuclear physics? All these things have been debunked. He is a liar. He's a pathological liar. And if these people are listening to these kind of people, how can you enter into a negotiation with somebody who cannot help himself but lie all the time? They need to identify proper people to negotiate, and not people that are just there for the attention sake of it.
Chad, I mentioned sort of a little teaser before the song, and that is a strange, it seems to me as an outsider, strange sort of alliance that's formed. And I'm talking about that between well-known, perhaps one even could say self-publicist, Paul O'Sullivan, a man who's in investigation, exposes corruption, and has formed some sort of joint venture with a thing called AgriForum. Take us through that.
Very strange, and I'll tell you why it's strange. Paul O'Sullivan has always been somewhat of a lone ranger. I won't go as far as to say lone wolf, because lone wolves normally is a negative connotation that they blow themselves up or they go take out schools, etc. He's been a lone ranger since 2000, 16 years. He's been fighting. It started when he was head of airports company, and he believed that Jackie Salebi had him removed from his post as head of airports company so that a company could maintain its stronghold over ORT, which was a very valuable multi-million rand security contract per annum. And he has been very, very vocal in his fight against what he perceives to be corruption. He's taken on Salebi, he's taken on Agliotti, he took on Radovan Krecha, he's taken on various generals, General Joma Basu, General Mpeho, he's now taking on General Munu, he wants to take on General Mokotedi. And you know what, hats off to somebody if they have a case that they've investigated and they believe there's a case to be answered to. And I believe that he has done a lot of good, but at the same time, his motives rather have been questioned, as well as the way in which he's gone about it. Now, AgriForum, that is the strangest merger one could ever expect, because they've now established what they've called an anti-corruption unit. They've got a legal team behind him, that being Paul O'Sullivan, and they now want to do what is known as private prosecutions, which are allowed in certain instances. It's a very expensive process, and very similar to America when they got Ken Starr, independent counsel, to go after Bill Clinton.
So it would almost be for test cases.
But it wouldn't be the NPA that is prosecuted. It would be a private prosecution, but you'd have to do it through the necessary courts. You'd have to apply for court days. You'd have to put down large sums of money.
It's almost lobbying through the law.
It is. So they want to now undertake private prosecutions, which to me is bizarre. Because if you look at independent counsel Ken Starr in America, who went up against Bill Clinton, you could see it was an extremely costly affair and there was an agenda at play. Now, AgriForum itself stands for the rights of those who were previously in power. They stand for the rights of the minority of South Africa, the whites, and primarily the Afrikaners. And one would find it strange that somebody who's so anti-corruption would amalgamate themselves, or rather join themselves with an organization that only identifies with a small portion of the population.
Chad, we're about to run out of time, and this program we've had, our chats today have been very specific about cases. But let's just, in a minute and a half, tell us about the overall sense of the direction of play in the fight against crime. Is it getting better or worse?
Last time I was on the show, I was extremely positive. I still am. If we see what's happened, we went through a local election, and although the ANC lost a number of metros, it went through smoothly the transfer of power. If you saw the Constitutional Court ruling against Zuma, he accepted their ruling, which means we have functioning democracy. It means that people listen to the courts, they listen to our Chapter 9s, and that to me is something that leaves me feeling positive. Are we going to win the fight against crime? Yes, we are. It needs to make a specific turn. Is it now that Radovan Krecha is about to come out in terms of his plea and acknowledge who was involved? I don't know.
All right. So we're almost there. We've been chatting with Chad Thomas, and he is the chairman of IRS Forensic Investigations. Thank you, Chad. And thank you, listeners, for joining me, Paul Pereira, and, of course, producer Trevor McClary, who's sitting behind the controls here. Thank you, Trevor. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Chad.
Goodbye.